It's time.
Time for stimulating talk. Time for thought-provoking conversation.
It's the Lisa Wexler Show.
Time to turn on your brain and get the real scoop on today's topics and events.
Now,
here's Lisa Wexler.
And welcome. It's 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to have fun today. We'll be joined by Alexandra Silber, a very talented actress and writer and singer. We'll talk about what she has written. She is doing a special one-night show at the Minetta Lane Theater in the city. We'll talk about that in a bit. 203-661-5051 at 6 minutes after 4 o'clock. I want to tell you what's happened here in Connecticut because it really brings up everything that we have been thinking and understanding and expressing and suppressing about what we think as a society, as a civil society, it means to be able to exercise our political opinions vis-a-vis our expression of speech. And nowhere does it become more provocative than when it comes to whether or not people are going to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Now, it started on a football field, but it has made its way to the little hamlet of Haddam, Connecticut, home of the Goodspeed Opera House, and a beautiful bucolic part of our state. And in that state, a former first select woman, but still select person, decided that she... And by the way, she's not the only one. There are two other people within the vicinity who are government officials who have been doing this. But she apparently has gotten a lot of notice for kneeling during the formal Pledge of Allegiance at a meeting at Town Hall. And this was reported in various newspapers and reached the ear and the attention of some politicians who were running for office. So last night, some of those politicians gathered 75 people in the town green in Haddam, Connecticut, to protest this woman's kneeling during the Pledge of Allegiance. And among those people were Republican gubernatorial candidate Tim Herbst, Republican Attorney General candidate John Chabon, Republican Treasurer candidate Art Linares, as well as at least 75 other people that happened to be there. And the story, as reported by Danielle Altamari of the Hartford Courant, is that in the room itself in the town hall, as this woman was kneeling, her last name is Schlag, she was feeling hatred in the room towards her. If you go online and see the picture, it's a pretty menacing looking person standing over her as he's pledging to the flag. And when interviewed, I thought it was fascinating the various opinions that were spoken, the pros and the cons of protesting her right to protest. One of the more notable voices, I thought, was a 71-year-old veteran, a veteran of the war in Vietnam, who said that he didn't fight in Vietnam so that he could come home and decide who... This is what he said. I did not go to Vietnam to pick and choose who gets to be better Americans. Bob Wallen of Haddam. And Bob Wallen defended Schlag's constitutional right to peacefully protest, saying, I took an oath to defend the Constitution. The Constitution starts with the First Amendment. She has that right. I'm not agreeing with her. I think the reason she does it is stupid. I don't care. Wallen said he was exposed to Agent Orange and is suffering the effects of that exposure. As he offered up his brief comments, he grew too weak to stand. He was given a chair and a bottle of water. declaring, "I did not go to Vietnam to pick and choose who gets to be better Americans." And speaking to the politicians who have denounced Schlag, he said, "Screw you. None of you earn that right. You people make me mad." Instead, he turned to the crowd and said, "You want to be upset? Well, two veterans a day commit suicide." 203-661-5051. Where do you stand on this? Where do you stand on this? Do you stand with the people in the room who raised their feet and their hands and in a show of solidarity with each other served as a counterpoint to Schlag's kneeling during the Pledge of Allegiance? Here's what some of the politicians said as the great song "God Bless the USA" by Lee Greenwood was playing, and if that isn't a national anthem of its own, I don't know what is, blaring from speakers, with a few in the crowd wearing "Make America Great Again" hats and Trump t-shirts. Coming together to stand for the flag, Art Linares said, "It's completely disrespectful. He's a state senator whose district includes Haddam. He invoked his own grandfather, who was jailed for standing up to Fidel Castro before fleeing communist Cuba. He said, this flag, our flag, represents the freedoms that make this country so great. He would have been so disappointed and sad to see what happened at that selectman's meeting." Another crowd of about 75, about a quarter mile away, on a long road leading to the firehouse, gathered themselves to stand in solidarity with Schlag. And several wore t-shirts identifying themselves as members of the Trump resistance. Others were dressed in Hillary Clinton campaign swag. Aubrey Bingham, 35, of Haddam, said, "Seeing one of our selectmen being attacked for exercising her rights and seeing Republicans campaign off it to rile up their base, I thought it was important to be here." And Schlag is not the only elected official in the Connecticut River Valley who's chosen to take a knee during the pledge. For the past year and a half, two members of the region's 17 school board, Democrat Eric Couture of Killingworth and Republican Maura Wallen of Haddam, have silently taken a knee while the pledge was recited. But for some reason, this particular protest is the one that has set off the controversy. As Schlag once again knelt, people were shouting out at her. Someone in the audience shouting, "Did you kneel during the Obama administration?" Schlag made a plea for civility. "I have a right to free speech," she said. "You have a right to dislike me. But please don't put words in my brain or thoughts in my brain. I mean no disrespect to any veteran." As she spoke, some in the audience knelt in support. Others turned their heads or backs to her. Others walked out. She said, "I appreciate everyone coming out because this is truly town government at its best. We need to continue the conversation or hate will continue to fester. We need to rip the bandage off. We can't wrap our sins in a flag and expect it to be okay." So what do you think? What do you think about all this? 203-661-5051. Let me posit this to you. Does it make America great to challenge her right to kneel? Does anybody think that she doesn't have the right to kneel? 203-661-5051. Does it provoke a strong reaction in you? Is something about it seem wrong that she's an elected official? Do you feel it's unpatriotic to kneel while the Pledge of Allegiance is spoken, or it has nothing to do with patriotism? It's basically just trying to make a statement about this country and a feeling about justice right now in this moment. You think it's inherently unpatriotic to kneel while the Pledge of Allegiance is said? Do you quarrel with her right to speak? 203-661-5051. And politically, do you think the politicians are taking advantage of the situation, blowing it out of proportion so that they can make a point with prospective voters? 203-661-5051. I can hear you. Weather and traffic, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Good afternoon. We're looking at a pretty decent ride here northbound on the Connecticut Turnpike. We got a 27-minute trip here from the state line up to Route 7 in Norwalk. Northbound Merritt Parkway, 23-minute ride now from the state line up to Route 7. Use your power to cure inflammatory bowel diseases and join the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation at Spin for Crohn's and Colitis Cures. Get started at spin4.com. I'm Jay Trelease, 1490 Traffic.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Clouds on the increase for tonight, turning more humid as well. A few rain showers developing after midnight, lows 65 to 70. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a couple rounds of scattered showers and thunderstorms, one in the early morning, another in the afternoon. Any storms will produce heavy downpours, highs 80 to 85. Showers and storms continue tomorrow night, storms producing heavy downpours, tapering off after midnight, lows 70 to 75. I'm meteorologist Ryan Gallagher on 1490 WGCH.
This is a reminder from the Greenwich Tax Collector Office. The tax for real estate, personal property, and motor vehicles on the 2017 grand list must be paid on or before this Wednesday, August 1st, to avoid interest. Payment made after Wednesday will be subject to interest at the rate of 1.5% per month, or a fraction thereof from the due date of July 1st. Payment made between August 2nd and August 31st will be considered as being overdue for 2 months. The interest will then be 3%. There is no need to visit the tax collector office in Town Hall. Save time and pay online. Go to greenwichct.org. Select the green tax information and online payment box on the lower right side of the page. Payment by electronic fund transfer is the cheapest. Credit card payment is also available. There is a convenience fee for paying online. Other options are send a check by mail postmarked on or before August 1st, or come to the tax collector office on the first floor of Town Hall to pay by check or cash. Window hours are 8:30 to 3:30 Monday through Friday. Any questions, call the tax collector office at 203-622-7891. That's 203-622-7891.
Listen to Anything Goes with Kim Burns. I'm Kim Burns.
And I'm co-host Meredith Bach, and we are live every Thursday at 11 a.m.
Join us for original comic news and entertainment and top-notch interviews and up-to-the-minute topics.
Join us and hear various co-hosts for far-reaching expertise on endless topics when you need to be in the know.
That's Anything Goes with Kim Burns, Thursday mornings at 11, 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com anywhere.
If you're thinking about it, Lisa's talking about it.
Join the conversation. It's the Lisa Wexler Show.
The little town of Haddam, Connecticut, might even be East Haddam, is making news because one of the selectmen has decided that she would continue to kneel when the Pledge of Allegiance was said at local town meetings, and this has drawn the attention and ire of certain politicians who decided to gather 75 people around a flagpole and protest. It has drawn some shouting matches at her own workspace. Elizabeth Schlag was told by a colleague that they hoped that she gets cancer and dies. Very nice. Very nice. As incivility is making its way to a little town in New England. And I ask you, because these are some of the issues raised, does it provoke you when somebody kneels to the Pledge of Allegiance? Do you consider it unpatriotic? Would it be something that you personally would protest? Or would you defend her right to express her right of free speech, even as you might disagree with her view of America? She obviously has a view of America right now is deeply flawed. Or she wouldn't be kneeling during the Pledge of Allegiance. She thinks we're in a time in which there's a lot of hate and incivility and injustice. But what do you think? 203-661-5051. As a gathering of Republican candidates gathered, among them Tim Herbst, Art Linares, who is a state senator in that district, and John Chabon to protest. We'll go first to Deb. Deb, hello, and welcome to the show today. Deb from Florida, but originally from Westchester.
Yes, and I'm on my way back tomorrow to come and visit you.
Oh, are you? Okay, Deb.
I think it's a disgrace.
Well, which is a disgrace? Which part?
She's a disgrace.
You think she's a disgrace? Okay.
Oh, yes.
So all right, and why do you say so, Deb?
Because I believe in my heart that everyone should stand for that. It shows that we are united, that we have a camaraderie, and I think she's showing something, even though this is all going on because of Trump.
Yes, okay? It is. That's correct.
This is all going on because he's the president, okay?
But wait a minute, the kneeling, did the kneeling and the football thing start during the Trump presidency, Josh? It did? I don't remember. Colin Kaepernick, wasn't that during the Obama administration because of Black Lives Matters? Wasn't that before Trump? 2016, right. I don't know, Deb. This kneeling started with a lot of the Black Lives Matters movement during the Obama administration, too.
Well, I believe it's out of hand. I think there is no respect for our flag, no respect for the United States, and for someone who's supposed to represent your county or whatever, because I don't know, I don't live in Connecticut, I think that's a disgrace. I think she should be removed from her position.
Really?
Yes.
Well, but on what ground? We do have the right to free speech, and an expression like that is considered speech by the Supreme Court.
Yes. I understand that, but that doesn't show that our children and our grandchildren will have the respect that is needed for us as a free country.
But I got to push back a little bit, Deb, because what does it mean to be free if you're punished for your expression that others disagree with? What does it mean to be free?
It means to be free because the United States of America was welcomed. Everyone here, it represented love, it represented caring, help. I just think that that's not what our children are going to see, and or our grandchildren, because you're not a grandmother, I am. And I think it's a disrespectful way, so kids will go on their knees, and they don't even know what they're standing for. They just think that, you know, let's go on our knees. You know, it's like free love, like 1969.
All right, Deb. Thanks for the call. Appreciate your opinion, as always. Thank you for calling in. 23 minutes after 4 o'clock, 203-661-5051. How do you feel about all of this? Do you feel that this woman, Elizabeth Schlag, has the right to do it? Do you care either way? Let me ask Josh. Josh, you're a young person. You're obviously a male. How do you and your general political inclinations? I would say are centrist right. Would that be
sure?
Centrist right. Okay. So when you view this situation, how do you view it?
My personal view is that I wouldn't do it. I would stand. That's just my how I was brought up and what I would do. Do I want to persecute others for deciding to act differently? Absolutely not. Do I think that in regards to the NFL, kneeling on, you know, a Sunday when millions of people are watching you and you know that you're going to be the center of attention and it takes away from the anthem itself, I don't think that that's the right time or the place to do it.
That's interesting. So you draw a distinction between doing it at a football field and a town meeting?
Well, because this all started in the NFL, I'll start there. The NFL's ratings over the course of the past like 10 years have been tens of millions of people watch it. So you know that you're going to provoke a reaction. And the point of watching the game is to watch two teams play football.
Okay.
Not necessarily get politics involved in that.
As opposed to a town meeting, which is all about politics and speaking your mind.
It's more of an appropriate venue.
Interesting. You think it's more of an appropriate venue. That's fascinating, actually.
But do I have a problem with people protesting? Absolutely not. As we were discussing this previously, this country was founded off people who were displeased with what their current country was imposing on them, and they decided.
Hence a revolution.
So it's a little bit, in my opinion, and you're allowed to have a different opinion, it's a little bit hypocritical if people are going to try to force certain individuals to conform when that's the exact thing that we stood against. But I do understand that the national anthem is supposed to be...
Well, this is the Pledge of Allegiance.
Okay, well, yeah. The Pledge of Allegiance is supposed to be, theoretically, a point of unison for the country, where no matter what, if you're a citizen, you take pride in being an American and you stand for the message that your national anthem or your Pledge of Allegiance states. But some people don't feel that way today, and that's totally all right. My grandfather was a World War II veteran, and I know for a fact that if he was still alive when this is going on, he wouldn't mind.
Like, he wouldn't mind.
The fact that
as this other Vietnam vet didn't mind.
Yeah, like you go to battle and you risk your life so that people have the ability to make these decisions. You know, it's not like, I mean, I hate to say this, but like forcing somebody to conform to a set of rules is, I mean, it's not a dictatorship what we're doing, but like it's...
Well, if you punish somebody for the exercise of their
right,
like exercise of free speech, then right. You could argue that they're not free.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like it wouldn't make sense for us to go around the world proclaiming we are this free nation that accepts differences, and then all of a sudden when they get here say, you need to stand for this. And to what Deb said, where people are kneeling for a cause and they don't even know what they're kneeling for, there are 6, 7, 8-year-olds today that stand for the national anthem that have no idea what it is.
Right. So well, but they stand for it because they're being taught that that's part of being a patriotic American.
Yeah, so the same argument could be made. But I honestly, if you have a different opinion, that's totally acceptable.
203-661-5051. It's not Elizabeth Schlag. It's Melissa Schlag, Democratic Select Woman of Haddam. And this was, and actually, she says that she knelt to protest President Donald Trump's defense of Russian leader Vladimir Putin, his hard line on undocumented immigrants, and other policies put forth by President Trump. So that's what's happening. And we are going to leave it at this as we go on to other news. But this is the kind of story it's taking place in our own little towns and hamlets throughout the region. It's not just happening on a big football field in front of national people anymore. Donald Trump is such a provocative president, such a provocative leader, that people are doing things in public to protest and support that have not been done before. It's 429-203-661-5051. Here at 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere. Stay tuned for more of the Lisa Wexler Show coming right up.
Good afternoon. We're looking at a pretty decent ride here northbound on the Connecticut Turnpike. We got a 27-minute trip here from the state line up to Route 7 in Norwalk. Northbound Merritt Parkway, 23-minute ride now from the state line up to Route 7. Use your power to cure inflammatory bowel diseases and join the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation at Spin for Crohn's and Colitis Cures. Get started at spin4.com. I'm Jay Trelease, 1490 Traffic.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Increasing cloudiness with rising humidity levels tonight. A few showers after midnight, lows 65 to 70. Tomorrow, partly sunny, scattered showers, locally heavy thunderstorms, highs 80 to 85. For the same partial sunshine, scattered showers and thunderstorms near 85 on Thursday. At Connecticut Basement Systems, they're the experts in all things basement-y. Call 866-691-8595 for a free quote. I'm meteorologist Ryan Gallagher on 1490 WGCH.
Senator Joe Markley is a career politician and right-wing ideologue. He was the lone vote against protecting young women from rape on college campuses. If we can't trust Joe to protect our kids, do you want him to be our lieutenant governor?
Meet Jamie Stevenson. Raised in a working-class family, a proud mom of 5 adult children, Jamie's had success in business and effectively manages a conservative, vibrant Connecticut town. Vote for conservative outsider Jamie Stevenson for lieutenant governor. Paid for by Stevenson for CT, Michelle Berardo, Treasurer.
I'm Jamie Stevenson, and I approve this message.
WGCH. Hi, I'm radio host and food writer Kate of Intoxicate.com. If you're always on the hunt for the new local hotspot, tune into my show, Fork This with Intoxicate, Tuesday evenings at 6 p.m. I'll be chatting with local chefs, cookbook authors, mixologists, brewmasters, and more, everything to tantalize those taste buds. Tune in to Fork This with Intoxicate every Tuesday night from 6 to 7 p.m. on 1490 WGCH.
If you're thinking about it, Lisa's talking about it.
Join the conversation.
Call 203-661-5051. It's the Lisa Wexler Show.
Bienvenue. It is 431 203 661 5051 is our number. Harvey Weinstein was spotted at the movie theater in Norwalk. That is the one right by the Bed Bath & Beyond, the one that I go to when I bother to go to the movies. And the movie that he went to reportedly was Mission Impossible Fallout, which got a pretty good review in the Times. They're calling Tom Cruise the last action hero, even though he's 56 years old and he's starting to show his age. I think he was a little bit upstaged by his co-star, who was the guy that used to play Superman.
Henry Cavill.
Yeah, but I didn't see the movie yet. Did you see Mission Impossible? Anyway, you're wondering, what? How can he be allowed to go see a movie? I'll tell you. Disgraced movie producer Harvey Weinstein has been spotted at Bowtie Ultimate Royale 6 in Norwalk this week. It's right on the Westport border on the Post Road. TMZ reporting that Weinstein was seen at the movies on July 29th and the 30th, but the theater only confirmed seeing him there on the 29th. A theater manager said, "We had a lot of celebrities." The theater had no further comment. According to TMZ, Weinstein tried to go semi-incognito, wearing all black, a hat, and sunglasses on July 30th. What is tonight, the 31st? So just last night, he went on a Monday night. The site also reported he watched Transylvania 3 and Mission Impossible Fallout. So now you say to yourself, what is he doing in our area? Particularly when we know he sold his house in Westport. He sold it for big money. His mom... You know, the company was called Miramax, and it was named after his parents, Miriam and Max. And Miriam outlived Max by a number of years, and she lived in Westport. She passed away recently. Well, not recently, but anyway. And then they sold that house. And Harvey had a huge spread and recently sold that as well on Beachside Avenue. Weinstein has pled not guilty to attacking three women. He's out on $1 million bail. A new count added this month, predatory sexual assault, carries a minimum sentence of 10 years in prison and a maximum of 25 years to life. So that could be like a celebrity spotting situation. All right. And speaking, let me do a little bit more local stuff, then we're going to circle back to certain things happening in D.C., but the other news is that the mall in Norwalk seems to be proceeding apace. I don't know if you've noticed the tremendous amount of construction going on off of 95, hard to miss. The owners are saying it's going to be open during 2019. So that's a huge deal. I think it represents a particularly significant threat and challenge to the Westchester Mall because it reportedly will have the same kinds of stores. We're hoping here in our neck of the woods that it's well attended and beautiful. I'm hoping they plant a lot of trees. Okay, we're going to turn now to a very talented one-woman dynamo. Her name is Alexandra Silber, and she has come up with an interesting concept for her own evening that she's going to be performing August 13th at the Minetta Lane Theater, one of the treasures of Greenwich Village. And she wrote and will be performing a story of what happened to one of the daughters in Fiddler on the Roof. And if you haven't seen Fiddler, what can I say? You should have. But most of us already did. So we can go right in and find out what does Alexandra Silber have in mind in terms of the sequel. Welcome, Alexandra, to the Lisa Wexler Show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you, Lisa, for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. So tell us a little bit about you and how you came to write this novel sequel to Shalom Aleichem's brilliant stories of Anna Tefka and Fiddler on the Roof.
First of all, A-plus pronunciation there. That was AP Yiddish. My career started actually in the United Kingdom. I was sort of trained in the UK, and my career started in the West End. And from 2006 to 2008, I played Huddle, Tevye's second eldest daughter, who sings that beautiful aria in the second act, Far From the Home I Love.
How can I hope to make you understand? I rewrote the words to that at my parents' 60th wedding anniversary.
Oh, Oh, I think that, I mean, you know, the thing that's so amazing about Fiddler is that it really has woven itself into the fabric of our culture.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Jewish or not, it's this incredibly universal story about family and culture and tradition, of course, and, you know, differences between generations. And for me at the time, speaking of family, I was going through a very difficult personal time because my father had recently passed away. And there I was playing Huddle in probably the most famous musical ever about fathers and daughters.
Yeah.
And this thing that I had been robbed of in my life, which was getting a proper goodbye with my dad, my papa, I was given theatrically this opportunity to say, "Papa, God alone knows when we shall see each other again."
Aww.
For my, you know, for years at a time. And it this character really haunted me and really stuck with me. And I invested so much in her, and I felt subsequently... She invested in me. She trusted me with her story for so long that when she boards this train at 18 years old, one of the most violent and tumultuous periods of history, I, of course, became concerned for my friend. and basically went about really needing to see the story through and by ensuring her capacity to endure. I ensured it for myself. So I really dove into research. I even went to Siberia.
Myself. Did you really?
I did to do physical research there and had a mind exploding.
What is that? Tell me about it. What does Siberia look like? What season of the year did you go there?
I started out there in August. So when I started, it was chilly. You know, chilly for what we as Westerners think of as August, but not Siberian winter. And, of course, it turned into Siberian winter very quickly. But what does it look like? I mean, that's actually such a beautiful question because one of the things that I really experienced and learned was it has this landscape and colorscape and value system of beauty that we in the West simply don't possess. You know, it's very interesting. Like, just to use a very North American parallel, you know how they sometimes say, actually John Steinbeck writes about this a lot in his books, that when a person is from the mountains, a mountainous part of America, they associate the mountains with this feeling of home and possibility, and they have a lot of really positive adjectives and feelings around mountain landscapes. And when someone is not from a mountain landscape, they see mountains as quite foreboding and can see them as quite sort of oppressive, if you will. And that was absolutely the experience I had, is that the people there see starkness and physical nature in a completely different way with a completely different value system than we do. So a really great example was, I remember one day I was staying on the Isle of Okhon, which is this tiny little island in the middle of Lake Baikal, a couple hours north of Irkutsk. And
I know it well, Alexandra. I'm kidding.
I know, I mean,
kidding.
No, I mean, we've all vacationed there,
right,
haven't we?
Right, right.
But I was there, and they basically said, we all have to get up early for this sunrise. And, you know, when I say sunrise to you, you probably are immediately thinking of all these warm colors, pinks and yellows and oranges, right?
Yes.
And what was so fantastic was the sun starts to break over the lake, and the sky turns an almost impossible glittering silver.
Really?
And it looked like a million nickels shining in the sky. And, of course, these people start bursting into tears because this is what they're used to. This is their beautiful sunrise. But for me, I felt like I was in a Star Wars film.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I felt like
totally.
I was on this planet. And, of course, when I think of a silver sky, I think of something quite foreboding. I think of menace. I think of, you know, the sky is gray as a gun is, you know, something that's often said in, detective literature and stuff like that. But it was really an amazing thing to be able to be there and see on the faces of the Siberian people that they associated that with extraordinary beauty. And, of course, I was thus able to see it that way myself. So it was an irreplaceable research trip because nothing replaces experience.
We're talking with Alexandra Silber, the author and the star of After Anna Tefka, which is going to be performing at the Minletta Lane Theater on August 13th. So you went to Siberia to experience it, and was that before you wrote After Anna Tefka?
It was sort of during. So I brought the early days of the manuscript there. I came back to London and continued to do West End musicals. I went on to to play Julie Jordan in Carousel in the West End. And then I moved to America and made my Broadway debut. And basically this book came with me and was my companion, not only everywhere I traveled, but in between my scenes in Broadway shows and, you know.
Alexandra, wherever you are, you have to stay where you are because the reception's going in and out.
Okay, I'm so sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes, that's much better. So, okay, so where did you make your Broadway debut?
I made my Broadway debut in 2011, opposite Tyne Daly. Can you believe it?
In Gypsy?
No, in Terrence McNally's Masterclass, which is the
I saw that with Zoe Caldwell.
Exactly. So Zoe Caldwell originated it, and we were the first Broadway revival, and it was, you know, the dream role of a lifetime, and what a way to come to Broadway. And actually, it's interesting that you mention 2011, because 2011 was the 10-year anniversary of my dad's passing.
Aww.
And that was the year that I decided to start writing my latest book, which just came out about 2.5 weeks ago, called White Hot Grief Parade, and where I really explored and discussed the nature of grief. And interestingly now, after Itezka and White Hot Grief Parade, you know, published literally 365 days apart, are really cousins because they explore this capacity, despite the fact that one takes place, you know, in Siberia and one takes place in modern times. They're very much related books.
You are so talented. We're going to hear a little bit. We're going to hear a little bit of you singing from Fiddler. Let's listen to Alexandra Silber on the Lisa Wexler Show.
He's 62, but he's a nice man, a good catch, true, true. I promise you'll be happy, and even if you're not, there's more to life than that. Don't ask me what. Carver, I found him. Won't you be a lucky bride? He's handsome.
Of course, we all know the song A Million Ways from Sideways. Matchmaker, matchmaker. So what happens to Huddle? In your mind's eye, in your expression, in your imagination, what happens to her? First of all, does she find her love in Siberia, or is he already gone? What happens to her?
Well, there's a lot. There's definitely a lot of conflict. And just before I answer that question, I want to say, of course, that was me singing in the Broadway production as Seidel. So I have this incredible, the clip you just played, sort of charts this incredible full circle experience where I was 8 years later able to return to this family as the oldest sister, and I had already completed the book and was able to see the story in the family within a completely new perspective. So,
I think it's gutsy to do anything with respect to Fiddler because it's so indelibly marked in many, many audiences. First, in terms of the original soundtrack, which in my view was still the best, was Ira Mustel. And I, pardon me for saying that. It's a personal opinion.
Okay.
And then the movie, which has had an impact on generations and generations of people.
Of course. And, you know, I think the thing that is so important to remember about Fiddler, of course, is that Fiddler itself is an incarnation of the Shalom Aleichem stories, so rightly said yourself, that Fiddler on the Roof brought those stories to a wider audience. And what was really, really special for me was I was able to, because I had done two huge high-profile productions of Fiddler, I really got to know and become very close with one of the original creators and now the last living creator, Sheldon Harnick, who wrote the lyrics to Fiddler on the Roof. And Sheldon was very instrumental and very inspirational in my process. And he, in fact, wrote the foreword to After Anna.
Wow.
And will, in fact, be introducing the Evening of Songs at the Minetta Lane on August 13th.
That's a thrill. That's
a
thrill.
It's a thrill. It's you know, for him to also see, you know, that Shalom Aleichem inspired him and his you know, co-creators, and that he subsequently and his co-creators inspired me to create this is very exciting.
And he must like it.
Creativity is. Oh, he does. And what's really interesting, of course, is that the Shalom Aleichem characters are in public domain. So when I went to Sheldon and told him about this project, sort of like Huddle and Perchik Ask Tevye, I wasn't really asking for his permission, but I desperately wanted his blessing.
Oh,
right?
That's so sweet, Alexander. That
well,
is so sweet.
And he very sweetly and generously offered it to me. And so, you know, to answer your question, there really is a tonal shift because I've always been a voracious reader and an extreme fan. I have an incredible high school English teacher named Jean Gady at Interlochen Arts Academy, who's my Russian literature teacher and really inspired my love of Russian literature. So there's the vibe of After Anatevka is Shalom Aleichem meets Dr. Zhivago or Crime and Punishment. You know, there's great sweeping romance. There's a lot of shtetl sentimentality and a lot of characters we know, but there's also a very real, incredibly accurate historical fiction aspect of what Hubble and the people, the very real people like her, endured in these very difficult times. And, you know, sadly, they're not so different from the times we're looking at right now, where freedoms are being compromised and people are being put to the test. And a lot of people have said that it's very, very dark and a very, very difficult thing to see what happens to such a beloved character. But my feeling was that Hoddle fictionally represents hundreds of thousands of women and Jewish women and Jews like her, that if I didn't tell their story accurately, I wasn't doing them the service of what they endured and what they gave us and the future that we were able to build on their backs. And it's an adventure story. It's a passionate love story between her and Perchik. And hopefully we get to find out what happened to some of our beloved friends from Anatevka, and we get to meet a lot of new characters, too, that really teach us a lot about Russia and about the world.
Well, I hope it's a major sold-out evening and the beginning of many performances of this. Has it been performed before?
It has. We did an evening of songs last year at Symphony Space,
okay,
on the Upper West Side. And what this will be is a sort of condensed version of that, where we've identified about 8 chapters from After Anatevka that are dramatizable. And Symphony Space beautifully and elegantly produced. They handed these chapters to Broadway composer lyricist teams, and they wrote original material inspired by Fiddler, but really based upon After Anatevka. So all of these characters that we are meeting in my book that didn't exist previously are being given a musical theater voice and joining their friends from Fiddler on the Roof in song. And it's really spectacular. And I will tell you, when we did it last year, I had to stop in the middle of the show and I go, this is like being a bat mitzvah. Like, all these creations that I had in my head are living and breathing, all sung and written and being performed by my closest friends. And this evening will be that and then some, because we've had a year to refine it, and then it's going to be preserved on audible.com as bonus content on the audiobook that will be available worldwide September 25th.
Very exciting, Alexandra. I'll try and be there myself. I'm all excited now.
Oh, I love that.
And I just wish you all good things. You just have the most charming personality. I would love to meet you in person. I'll be following your career with great interest. Dave Friedman, composer David Friedman, is a regular on the show on Thursdays.
And
he's a doll, and he's a fan of yours, too.
Yeah, well, I'm a huge fan of his.
It's mutual. It's mutual. So it's Monday, August 13th at the Minetta Lane Theater, which is one of the most charming places to see anything, right in the middle of Greenwich Village, ever. I mean, it's just a fantastic. When you go on Minetta Lane, you know, you can imagine yourself in the West End. You're like in a different place. And it's Alexandra Silber's musical depiction of her novel After Anatevka. Go see it. How can people, I guess, Ticketmaster.com, easy enough.
Yes.
Tickets are only $30. It's a steal. Congratulations and good luck.
Thank you so much, Lisa, and all the best.
Pleasure. A pleasure to have you on. 10 minutes before the hour, 203-661-5051, here at 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Good afternoon. Traveling the northbound Connecticut Turnpike, we've got a half-hour ride now to get from the state line up to Route 7, 30 minutes. Northbound Merritt Parkway in great shape. From the state line to Route 7, a 20-minute trip. Every 52 minutes, someone killed by a drunk driver. Join Mothers Against Drunk Driving at Walk Like Mad 5K near you. Sign up at walklikemad.org. I'm Jay Trelease in the 1490 WGCH Traffic Center.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Clouds on the increase for tonight, turning more humid as well. A few rain showers developing after midnight, lows 65 to 70. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a couple rounds of scattered showers and thunderstorms. One in the early morning, another in the afternoon. Any storms will produce heavy downpours. Highs 80 to 85. Showers and storms continue tomorrow night. Storms producing heavy downpours tapering off after midnight. Lows 70 to 75. I'm meteorologist Ryan Gallagher on 1490 WGCH.
Are you looking to cut costs without sacrificing quality? If so, Onboard Services is waiting for you. Onboard Services takes the administrative hassle of running a business off your hands. From payroll to benefit plans, hiring, and outplacement, Onboard does it all. Onboard has trained specialists to provide your organization with employees based on the skill sets you desire. A family-run business for over 40 years, including clientele among Fortune 400 companies, Onboard is experienced in over 100 disciplines. For temporary and long-term help, or if you just want to save money without dismissing your current employees, do what the experts do. Call Onboard Services right now. Call 609-945-8009. That's 609-945-8009. Or on the web at www.obcc.net. For a special offer, mention WGCH. Take the hassle out of running your business so you can concentrate on the bottom line. Call Onboard Services today.
This is Noreen Ehrlich, Success and Relationship Coach. Your time is precious. It is time to stop hiding and start hustling. What does that mean, you say? Please join me every Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m. for Defy and Hustle with Noreen Ehrlich, when I'll approach your everyday issues with wise but uncommon sense. You don't have to settle. I want you to be in love with your life. Are you ready? Then join me Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. on 1490 WGCH.
The Lisa Wexler Show.
She's talking about it today, so you can talk about it tomorrow.
It's time to turn on your brain.
Now,
here's Lisa Wexler.
In one of the top stories of the day, Facebook has uncovered a coordinated political influence campaign ahead of the November midterms, according to the New York Times. Facebook has reportedly uncovered, quote, dozens of inauthentic accounts and pages centered around the second Unite the Right rally and the Abolish ICE movement on social media. So think about what that means. That means that if you're seeing something on Facebook that purports to be not an ad, but an actual account person bot, but it purports to be a person, it's telling you that there's this big Abolish ICE movement. Who does that help? It helps, doesn't help the Democrats, because we know that the Abolish ICE movement is actually a very small sliver of people within the Democratic movement. It's the left wing of the Democrats. So it helps the Republicans if there is a perception among the large majority of centrist Americans that there's this big Abolish ICE movement. It's very nefarious. It's very, very sneaky. Got to understand what they're thinking here. In a letter published today, Facebook announced it has removed 32 Facebook and Instagram accounts due to coordinated inauthentic behavior. They also disclosed that a page supporting a counter-protest to the Unite the Right 2 rally did recruit real activists who, quote, unwittingly helped build interest in the event. In other words, there was maybe no counter-protest at all. Facebook has not definitively tied the pages to Russia or Russian organizations, but they do admit that they found evidence of some connections between these accounts and the accounts that they know were used to interfere in the 2016 election. The network also revealed in its letter that the accounts behind some of the removed pages spent $11,000 buying 150 ads paid in U.S. or Canadian dollars. The company is also reportedly working with the FBI on the matter and has been beefing up its security team ahead of November by recruiting workers with government security clearances. Now, this is, of course, coming in the wake of the huge stock dip of Facebook, which to some meant that the once impenetrable rise of Facebook is no longer the case. You cannot take it for granted that Facebook will keep going up and up and up and up. So this is something we should all be concerned about. You know, Donald Trump has done a lot to cast aside or cast aspersions on the notions of the media delivering truth. And if you believe the latest survey of Republicans, an extraordinarily high amount of Republicans, somewhere between, I think, 80 and 90%, believe that President Trump is telling the truth, while they believe, well, only 11% believe that the media is telling the truth. So Donald Trump has done a really good job at eroding the trust in the regular media. But I think that it's up to us to also be very cynical when it comes to what we are reading on social media that purports to be truthful. It's going to be up to us to not believe everything we read on Facebook. That's our job. Just as many people are cynical of what they read in Time Magazine, the New York Times, here on Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, you name it, Americans are a lot more cynical when it comes to believing what they read. We are going to have to take that cynicism and apply it right to our computer screens. Just because it's on a Facebook account coming from someone that we actually know doesn't mean it's true. People are being unwittingly duped on Facebook. And it's a serious issue. It's a serious problem. It's 3 minutes before 5 o'clock, and we have to take it seriously. And frankly, so does Facebook. An ICE official today, speaking of ICE, from Immigration and Customs Enforcement, defended the conditions in immigrant detention facilities by comparing them to summer camp while speaking to the Senate Judiciary Committee today, according to the Washington Post. Do we have this audio? I don't know why. I don't have audio today. I don't know why it didn't come through. I'm very comfortable. Listen to this. One top ICE official said, "I'm very comfortable with the level of service and protection that is being provided." And he later said that the family residential centers, his words, were more like a summer camp. Officials also defended the major delays in family reunification by saying that the agencies had to improvise a system last minute under a judge's orders. They blame the judges, saying this is a novel situation. The systems were not set up to have referrals include parent information. But you know what one of the congressmen said? He said the children's entertainment venue Chuck E. Cheese had a better system for preventing children from being separated from their parents than the U.S. government does. The defense is dumbfounded, American congressman, according to the Washington Post. Another took issue with the official's apparent shirking of responsibility and noted that the administration's zero-tolerance policy was directly responsible for sparking the more than 2,500 family separations. One Democratic congressman said, "Blame other people if you wish, but this started with somebody in the White House with a bright idea that turned out to be a disaster." And in more news, a report from U.S. intelligence agencies says that they have obtained evidence that suggests that North Korea is building new missiles in the same facility that produced the country's first intercontinental ballistic missiles capable of reaching the United States. Also, the Washington Post reporting that evidence, including satellite photos, suggests at least one liquid-fueled missile is being produced at a large research facility outside Pyongyang. It shows the country may be producing advanced weapons, even as the U.S. is attempting to get North Korea to completely denuclearize. Experts describe the plant in question to be active, with supplies and other vehicles captured entering and exiting the facility on a daily basis in photos. We're coming up on 5 o'clock. I'm Lisa Wexler. Lots more to discuss in the next hour. Stick around. 203-661-5051.
You're listening to the Voice of Greenwich, 1490 WGCH Greenwich.
Arts, new election meddling. I'm Mike Moss.
The bank and tax fraud trial of Paul Manafort is underway. Correspondent Jessica Schneider.
Paul Manafort is facing the 12 jurors and four alternates who will decide whether he could spend the rest of his life in prison. The president's former campaign chairman appeared in a Virginia courtroom wearing a dark suit with his hair neatly parted as prosecutors opened their case against Manafort for bank and tax fraud, 18 counts in all. Manafort's lawyers, meanwhile, remained resolute.
Feeling good.
Good. Any chance that he may decide to flip and cooperate?
No chance.
It all looks so familiar. Facebook tells the government there is another coordinated attack underway on Facebook and Instagram using fake accounts and web pages to target the 2018 elections. Correspondent Drew Griffin on what they're seeing.
Nearly 290,000 users followed these 32 fake sites. One of the most followed pages was called Resistors. They actually set up a counter-protest to a white nationalist rally being planned in D.C. less than 2 weeks from today.
Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen today warned Russia there will be significant retaliation if the attacks don't stop. Tomorrow, printable plastic guns will be available online. The president says it doesn't seem to make sense. Senator Ed Markey.
Mr. President, you once said that you alone can fix things. Well, fix this deadly mistake that once again your administration has made.
The guns were approved for sale by the Justice Department. Mexico's president-elect says he hopes to get an agreement with the U.S. on border, migration, and security issues, as well as a new NAFTA trade deal. President Trump again today threatened a government shutdown unless he gets immigration reform and border wall funding. A good day on Wall Street, the Dow up 108 points. I'm Mike Moss.
Does your dog itch, scratch, stink, or shed like crazy? Come to Dynavite for help.
Order a 90-day supply of Dynavite.
Dynavite for life.
Pick up two tubes of Dogasuds.
Get the third tube free.
Peppermint, tea tree, lavender, Dogasuds shampoo.
Made with all-natural coconut, jojoba, aloe. Great for healthy skin and soft, shiny coats.
But no itchy, harsh chemicals.
Lather up, rinse away.
Try Dogasuds. Buy two, get one free.
At Dynavite.com.
Dinovite.com.
Get your Ph.D. in back to school from Staples. Today's lesson, one stop is greater than two. Staples has everything for back to school at low prices and always in stock. So no going store to store to get everything on your list. And now, Staples 4-ounce glue, comp books, and 12 packs of yellow number 2 pencils are each just 50 cents. Get your degree in back to school today at your local Staples, the back to school specialty store.
While supplies last, offer ends 8/4/18. In store only. Limit 30 on comp books and pencils.
Most people try to stay away from sharks. Two men have confessed to stealing one from the San Antonio Aquarium.
Surveillance video shows two men and a woman sneaking the 2 to 3 foot long gray horn shark from the aquarium into the stroller. Leon Valley Police Chief Joseph Salvaggio says officers tracked down the truck the suspects were riding in and made the arrests.
We got confessions from two of the individuals that were seen on the tape. We'll be talking to the third, the female. I'm not sure exactly whether we'll charge her immediately or not.
Police say the home where the shark was found had what looked like a mock-up of the San Antonio Aquarium inside. The shark wasn't hurt and is doing fine. I'm Clayton Neville.
Actor Alan Alda is revealing he has Parkinson's disease. Alda says he's had a full life since he was diagnosed 3.5 years ago. He says he's acted, given talks, even started a new podcast. Says he hardly has any symptoms other than a thumb twitch. I'm Mike Moss.
On this episode of the World's Shortest Sitcom by KFC. So what did we learn today, folks? That's right. KFC now has 4 different $20 fill-ups to feed a family of 4. Like my 8-piece extra crispy or 8-piece original recipe. 12-piece tenders or my new 6-piece boneless breast with all the fixings for just $20. Wow, that sure is one reactive audience. Anyways, see you next time. KFC, it's finger-licking good. At participating KFCs, prices may vary. Tax and substitutions extra.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
As a small business owner, there's...
Good afternoon. If you are traveling the northbound side of the Merritt Parkway, we're looking at only a 20-minute ride here from the state line up to Route 7 in Norwalk. Connecticut Turnpike, not that bad, 28-minute ride northbound from the state line up to Route 7. Hey, what is the education of your children worth? There are children across the world who lack the privilege of going to school. Change the story for one child at unbound.org. I'm Jay Trelease, 1490 Traffic Center.
WGCH 1490.
Be inspired. This is Lisa Wexler. Every Saturday morning at 10, join us for the Accorda Scientific Excellence Award, a special program featuring the kids in our neighborhoods doing independent research in science, technology, engineering, and math. Hear from the students themselves about their discoveries, how music improves memory loss. One student invented a better bicycle. Apply free on Accorda.com, ACORDA.com. Tune in every Saturday morning at 10 here on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Attorney, advocate, author, public speaker, master communicator.
Lisa Wexler knows a thing or two and isn't afraid to take on today's newsmakers.
So flip that switch and turn on your brain. It's hour two of the Lisa Wexler Show.
It's 6 minutes after 5 o'clock. 203-661-5051 is our number. Coming up in a few minutes, the reporter who was on site, Danielle Altamari, for the Hartford Current, and was able to witness the protests last night in Haddam, Connecticut, in which Melissa Schlag, one of the selectmen, she's a woman, but one of the selectmen, kneeled, and it's not the first time, but she kneeled in a public protest to the Pledge of Allegiance. She's going to come on and talk to us a little bit about what it was like there and the forces and counterforces and the level of general emotion that was riled up here in Connecticut about something as provocative as kneeling during the Pledge of Allegiance. 7 minutes after the hour, 203-661-5051. Some short headlines. New York City banning smoking in public housing while it is attempting to rid public housing of this public health issue, the public health problem of smoking. It is being accused of misunderstanding its priorities. New York City public housing is known for rats, filth, vermin, lead, crime. If you name it, they've got it in New York City public housing. And many poor people smoke. Smoking is a habit and a refuge of a lot of people who are not wealthy. And even as some people may criticize them for it, I don't know, it rankles me. It just does. I guess, you know what I think? I think of the idea that your home is your castle and you ought to be able to smoke in it, even though I know that there are many co-ops and condos that forbid smoking because it can seep through the walls and the vents and it can infect other people with secondhand smoke. I think New York City has a lot more problems because they're not doing it, they say, because of the danger of fire. Although there is always a danger of fire when it comes to smoking in one's apartment. But there's always a danger of fire when you smoke. So it's not about fire. It's really about their own good. That's what's happening in New York City. A jury is being selected in the Paul Manafort trial, the trial that could take weeks. There's a lot at stake in the Paul Manafort trial, as we know. For many people, it's a referendum on the entire Robert Mueller investigation. Donald Trump, in a tweet echoing Rudolph Giuliani, saying collusion is not a crime, but that doesn't matter because there was no collusion. In other words, bringing an issue out and then taking it back because saying it's not an issue at all. Giuliani telling CNN's Allison Camerota, colluding about Russians, I'm not even sure that's even a crime. The hacking is the crime. The president didn't hack. Jay Sekulow, another member of Trump's legal team, repeating the claim during an appearance this morning on Fox and Friends. Collusion isn't a crime. Collusion isn't a crime. Collusion isn't a crime. Chris Christie saying collusion isn't a crime. You know, you can say it all you like, but if God forbid it's proven, God forbid it's proven that our president colluded with the Russians in order to get himself elected? I would say that we have a real problem in this country with allegiance to our own electoral system. Really, really big problem. I feel like I'm living in Jabberwocky sometimes. I feel like it's Alice in Wonderland. And the more people say things and insist they're true, the more they actually convince other people to believe what they're saying is true. But it doesn't make it true just because you say it a lot. And you and I, we've got to keep remembering that. 10 minutes after 5 o'clock, 203-661-5051. Okay, I want to move on from that because I really think it's the fun house. And it's not very fun. I wanted to talk with you a little bit about some news that you may not hear much. And that today, it's making the rounds, a story appearing in the Wall Street Journal. An extraordinary story about families that are hiring coaches to help their kids play video games better. It seems that there is a video game called Fortnite that has truly swept the world, this country. And it has become something that is a status symbol in terms of peer pressure, in terms of a generation of kids and how they compare themselves to each other in terms of the way they play. Now, I've never played Fortnite. It's described as a popular shoot-em-up video game. Josh, you might know better than I. Is it like Halo? Is it like, what's the one?
The easiest way to describe it is like it's like a battle royale. So like 100 gamers online, 100 users are dropped onto this map, and it's basically just survival of the fittest.
Okay.
So you just, it's everybody.
And are you playing in real life with these other gamers in real time?
Yep.
Okay. And it's always 100 people at a time?
Well, no, it varies. That's just an example.
Oh, like, I see.
There's just a certain amount of people that are just dropped onto a map, and they have to survive and kill until.
And do they survive by killing each other, or do they survive by going through a maze? How are they surviving?
No, you kill each other.
They're killing each other. Okay, so it's who's the best murderer. All right, so this story is about a person named Allie Hicks who fretted over her 10-year-old son playing Fortnite, not because it was violent, not because he was spending his life doing it, but it was because he wasn't winning. So she hired him a coach for about $50, buying 4 hours of online lessons from a player she found through a freelance labor website. And as the Wall Street Journal describes, Fortnite has become a social proving ground. More than 125 million people play it worldwide. And if you're a good winner, she says, there's pressure not just to play it, but to be really good at it. She's from Winchester, England. You can imagine what that was like for him at school because her son wasn't good enough in this particular video game. I can tell you, I don't have too many regrets personally as a parent, but one of them was that I didn't stand on my head, scream and shout, insist and do whatever it was I needed to do as a parent to stop my son from playing so many video games as an adolescent. I made a mistake. I gave in to his very strong will when he became addicted to a video game at that time called EverQuest. And he and his best friend played it hours and hours and hours a day. And I saw it as a way for him to relieve some of his general anxiety and bond with some of his own peers. But I was wrong. I was wrong, and he was wrong in retrospect. He said he wasted way too much time playing it, which he regrets now, time that would have been otherwise spent doing much more productive things. And I think for the parents who think that spending money on a coach to play video games better is a good use of time, they are completely down the wrong garden path. They are better off taking that entire video game and throwing it out the window. It's 14 minutes after 5 o'clock. Coming up, a conversation with Danielle Altamari of the Hartford Courant as we go back to the conversation that began in Haddam, Connecticut, about the rightness or wrongness, the political speech of a particular selectman who decided to kneel instead of stand up during the Pledge of Allegiance at Town Hall. You're listening to Lisa Wexler at 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere. Stay tuned.
Good afternoon. If you are traveling the northbound side of the Merritt Parkway, we're looking at only a 20-minute ride here from the state line up to Route 7 in Norwalk. Connecticut Turnpike, not that bad. 28-minute ride northbound from the state line up to Route 7. Hey, what is the education of your children worth? There are children across the world who lack the privilege of going to school. Change the story for one child at unbound.org. I'm Jay Trelease, 1490 Traffic Center.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Increasing cloudiness with rising humidity levels tonight. A few showers after midnight, lows 65 to 70. Tomorrow, partly sunny, scattered showers, locally heavy thunderstorms, highs 80 to 85. For the same, partial sunshine, scattered showers and thunderstorms near 85 on Thursday. At Connecticut Basement Systems, they're the experts in all things basement-y. Call 866-691-8595 for a free quote. I'm meteorologist Ryan Gallagher on 1490 WGCH.
This is a reminder from the Greenwich Tax Collector Office. The tax for real estate, personal property, and motor vehicles on the 2017 grand list must be paid on or before this Wednesday, August 1st, to avoid interest. Payment made after Wednesday will be subject to interest at the rate of 1.5% per month, or a fraction thereof from the due date of July 1st. Payment made between August 2nd and August 31st will be considered as being overdue for 2 months. The interest will then be 3%. There is no need to visit the tax collector office in Town Hall. Save time and pay online. Go to greenwichct.org. Select the green tax information and online payment box on the lower right side of the page. Payment by electronic fund transfer is the cheapest. Credit card payment is also available. There is a convenience fee for paying online. Other options are send a check by mail postmarked on or before August 1st, or come to the tax collector office on the first floor of Town Hall to pay by check or cash. Window hours are 8:30 to 3:30 Monday through Friday. Any questions, call the tax collector office at 203-622-7891. That's 203-622-7891.
Around the House with Steve Gladstone on Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 is jam-packed with important information, preventative maintenance, and all sorts of home tips to keep your house in great shape and your family safe. We have special guests on heating, cooling, environmental issues, and we make it fun with trivia contests and prizes. Don't let that home fall apart around you. Join us Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 on Around the House with Steve Gladstone on 1490 WGCH.
What happened today
is what we're talking about now.
It's the Lisa Wexler Show.
Join the conversation by calling 203-661-5051.
At 17 minutes after the hour, welcome back to the show. I'm Lisa Wexler. And as we were talking in the last hour, a town was riled up. Lots of reporting going on. Candidates going to Haddam, Connecticut to air their grievances or their support, their feelings about a provocative gesture that was made by Melissa Schlag, former first selectwoman of Haddam, Connecticut, and now selectman, as she knelt for the Pledge of Allegiance during a town hall meeting. Joining us now, someone who was there to witness everything and report on it, Daniela Altamari of the Hartford Courant, who wrote an extensive article about it in today's paper, which I quoted from liberally, Daniela, and thank you very much for writing that article.
Thank you.
So, Daniela, tell us a little bit about your bird's eye view of the scene. You decided to go to Haddam, Connecticut. You heard about this activity happening with Melissa before. Did you have any cue or, you know, heads up that she was going to do it again last night?
Well, we had covered the story last week. This initially happened at the selectmen's meeting from 2 weeks ago, mid-July. She did this. She knelt during the pledge, and there was some criticism and also quite a bit of support for her actions following that. So this was the first meeting after that initial instance where she did kneel. And it was quite a spectacle. Haddam is a lovely, beautiful small town, Connecticut. Situated on the banks of the Connecticut River. I mean, it's just a very charming and lovely place. About 7,000 people live there. Last night, it was sort of felt like ground zero in this moment that we're in this country, where people were incredibly passionate on both sides, incredibly inflamed. There was a lot of emotion. There was a big crowd, roughly evenly divided between supporters of Melissa Schlag and critics. And, the Board of Selectmen were having their meeting, and they had all their, normal business on there. But they also have a time for public comment, and that's where, you know, the voices were heard and people spoke up on both sides of this issue.
So in public, were people shouting out, or were they recognized by the leader of the meeting?
So the leader of the meeting, the first select woman, did, you know, keep order. People spoke, you know, had to get up to the podium, or there was really no podium, but go up to the, you know, sort of the front and state their name. And, you know, many were, you know, some were from out of town, but a fair number, you know, I'd say probably the majority were people from Haddam itself. So these were townspeople. And, you know, they got up and they said their piece. Everybody had about 3 minutes to speak. During the, you know, when people were speaking, there was some jeering, there was some shouting, there was some, you know, applause, there was booing. I mean, it was quite boisterous, just that, you know, the crowd's reaction. There were probably 150 people. The meeting was held at the volunteer firehouse, and it was quite surreal. You know, it was a very, very warm night, and they had, you know, people were packed in there, and then couple of points during the night, there were fire calls and there were, you know, scanners going off and sirens. And so that just sort of added to the air of, you know,
drama,
sort of urgency.
Yes.
Yeah, drama.
Yes. And so people were packing into town hall. So, and it became in a way a referendum on what, her right to do what she was doing, or what she was saying about the country.
Well, I think they were very much tied together. I think it was, that's a good way to phrase it. It was a referendum on, you know, sort of, the idea that, you know, free speech versus, you know, respecting the flag. That was sort of the way it boiled down. And, you know, at the very end of the meeting, Melissa Schlag spoke. She did not get into a discussion. She just sat there and listened. And people were quite harsh and very hostile to her. And she just sat there and listened. And then at the end, she spoke and she said, you know, her intention was not to disrespect the flag. This was not about disrespecting veterans. This was about her, in her view, standing up for her rights under the First Amendment to criticize the country when she felt that something was going wrong.
And in her view, and I don't know that she expressed this one way or another, but do you think her view is that by kneeling during the Pledge of Allegiance, she is saying that this country doesn't deserve her, or that the symbol of this country doesn't deserve her respect right now because there are too many things wrong with this country? I mean, what do you think she's trying to say?
Well, I'm not sure, because I you know, she was actually quite critical. She said people are trying to get inside of her brain and speculate on her motives. And, you know, that's not certainly my place as a news reporter. I do know, you know, she has said she was moved to act. She's, you know, concerned. She was quite concerned about, you know, some of the president's policies, including his policies on immigration, the way immigrant children are being treated, separated from their parents. Those are all things that you know, concern her. And the immediate sort of impulse for her to do this at that very meeting, she said she decided that day, or, you know, perhaps right before the meeting, that she was upset because that was the day President Trump had the meeting with Vladimir Putin. And he, you know, as you remember, his press conference in Helsinki, and where he talked about, you know, sort of how he viewed Russian interference. And he, you know, essentially took the side of President Putin over the American intelligence community. And I think she has said that's what sort of impelled her to act on that particular day.
What I find so fascinating, we're chatting with Daniela Altomare of the Hartford Courant, 203-661-5051, if you feel inclined to join the conversation. What I find so fascinating is that she is the former first selectman of the town. And then I guess she either didn't run again, or did she lose, and that's why she's no longer the first selectman?
I'm not 100% sure. I think what happened, and I don't cover Haddam, so I don't know all the details. I think she lost, and then she ran, and then she, you know, that was the last cycle, and then this current cycle she ran again just for the board, and she won. I believe that's what happened, but I can't speak for sure on
it'll
that.
Be interesting to see if she ever gets elected again in Haddam.
Well, I mean, there were certainly folks there that, you know, people said they will never vote for her. Some people said they had once supported her, but they will never support her again. But you know, for every person who feels that way, perhaps there's another person, there's certainly some were very vocal, who said, you know, they do support her now more than ever because they agree that, you know, she has this right to you know, react this way, and they were offended by, you know, some of the criticism.
Yeah.
So it's hard to tell how it's going to shake out.
I mean, there were reports today that somebody at her work hoped that she got cancer and died. You know, what? I don't know what it is with people. You know, they just, they always take it off the deep end, Daniela. You know what I mean?
There was, yeah, it was quite emotional. And there were, you know, you could see even the tension in the room last night. There were, you know, people were extremely passionate. And, you know, there was, she did sort of, there was quite a bit of hostility directed at her. You know,
people feel very strongly, you know, and immigrants above all tend to feel very strongly about patriotism to this country, like really strongly about it, because very often they were persecuted in other places.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't Art Linares, he was quoted in your article as saying that he thought that his protest was out of respect for his grandfather who escaped Castro.
Yeah, he had. He was one of the organizers of the protest. So prior to the meeting, there was a protest on the town green, and there were probably 75 to 100 people out there who were very critical of Melissa Schlag's stance on the flag, and they spoke out. It, you know, it was organized, as you mentioned, Art Linares is a candidate for state treasurer, and he's the son of immigrants from, or the grandson of immigrants from Cuba. And he invoked his grandfather's experience. And, you know, that was moving, you know, certainly to hear that.
Who else was there? Which other politicians were there?
So there was a candidate for governor, Tim Herbst, and he's also been, you know, widely quoted on this issue. He was sort of one of the first, along with Art Linares, to kind of highlight it. He's a Republican candidate for governor. And then another Republican candidate showed up, Steve Ocitnik. He was there as well. And then there was Jamie Stevenson, who is running for lieutenant governor. Those were the politicians that I saw. Some perhaps could have come later that I had to leave to go to the town meeting. So I'm not sure if, you know, others arrived after I left. But those were the ones that I saw at the rally.
And were these politicians arguing that it was inappropriate of her to do what she
yes.
was doing? I see.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they were. The rally was billed as, I believe, the title was "Defend the Flag" or something like that. And they were objecting to her. And they said that if she has a problem with President Trump, that's fine and that's her right. But she shouldn't, in their view, quote, disrespect the flag. That was their take on it.
I just wonder
disrespecting the flag.
Yeah, you know, I just wonder if this isn't particularly provocative, Danielle. We're talking with Daniela Altomare of the Hartford Courant. If it isn't particularly provocative because she is a town official versus mm-hmm. being somebody in the audience who
yeah.
just decided to kneel.
Yeah, and that was several people said that in the meeting, and one gentleman said, you know, do what you want to do, but don't do it on the town's time, do it on your own time. And if you want to kneel, you know, at a soccer game or an athletic event or anywhere else where there's a pledge or the anthem is played, that's fine, but don't do it on, you know, this is the town's time and you're on the town's, you know, on the town's clock here, and you shouldn't be doing this at this moment. The irony is there are two other officials in small, you know, in that same region, the regional school district that serves Haddam and Killingworth. There are two officials. One is a Republican. One is a Democrat, like Melissa Schlag, who have been kneeling as well for over a year. And there's been very little outcry. So some people were saying, why is it only an issue when a Democrat is doing it? A Republican had been doing it, but of course another Democrat had been doing it as well. There were two officials, school board members, who had been kneeling. And I spoke with one of them last week, and he said that he was motivated because he was sort of taking a page from the NFL players protesting racial injustice and other issues in the country.
Fascinating. Fascinating.
Yeah.
So the kind of conversation about civility and respect, tolerance, acceptance, and free speech comes down to a little town in Haddam, Connecticut.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it really is. So when you came away from that, Daniela, as a reporter, as somebody who is, you know, a human being, an American, I mean, what was your takeaway?
Well, it just the incredible passion, you know, this is in largely, you know, as you just explained, it's really a symbolic debate, right? It's really not about anything of substance. per se, other than a very powerful symbol, which is our American flag. And that is a extremely powerful symbol. And people, you know, on both sides of the issue are extremely passionate and care a lot. So maybe that's a good sign out of all of this, you know, that people do care to have this discussion wherever you fall on the issue, whether you think, you know, she's wrong to do this and that it is disrespectful, or whether you think, you know, she has 100% has this right as an American and should speak out if she feels that something's wrong in our country. Wherever you fall on the issue, I think it's kind of, I don't know, in some ways maybe a positive sign that people care this much to engage in this dialogue.
I want to thank you very much, Daniela Altomare. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for your writing. I follow you with interest. I love the Hartford Current. We attribute it all the time on this show. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep those printing presses running. Okay.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Sure. It's 5:30. I'm Lisa Wexler. 1490 WGCH, WGCH.com anywhere.
Good afternoon. If you're traveling the northbound Connecticut Turnpike, we're looking at a 30-minute ride from the state line up to Route 7. The northbound Merritt, on the other hand, a 22-minute trip from the state line up to Route 7. Use your power to cure inflammatory bowel diseases and join the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation at Spin 4 Crohn's and Colitis Cures. Get started at spin4.org. I'm Jay Trelase, 1490 Traffic.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Clouds on the increase for tonight, turning more humid as well. A few rain showers developing after midnight, lows 65 to 70. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a couple rounds of scattered showers and thunderstorms, one in the early morning, another in the afternoon. Any storms will produce heavy downpours, highs 80 to 85. Showers and storms continue tomorrow night, storms producing heavy downpours, tapering off after midnight. Lows 70 to 75. I'm meteorologist Ryan Gallagher on 1490 WGCH.
Having a child with a learning disability is not easy. Winston Prep knows that. Until now, when your son or daughter was ready for high school, you've had few choices. Either send him away to boarding school, where he'll get that special attention he needs, or you take a shot at the local public high school, where you'll spend so much time trying to get them to provide enough support. But now there's another option. The Winston Prep School, located right in Norwalk. Winston Prep School is the only day high school for kids with learning disabilities. Actually, they start at grade 6 going through grade 12. Every child benefits from the FOCUS program, a daily one-on-one instructional session. Winston's highly trained teachers instruct kids with both language-based and nonverbal learning disabilities. If you're a parent who wakes up every morning and says, "What can I do today to make my kid's life a little better, to increase her chances of success?" then give Winston Prep a call at 203-229-0465. That's 203-229-0465, or sign up for one of their upcoming open houses. Winston Prep may be the answer you've been looking for.
Listen to Anything Goes with Kim Burns. I'm Kim Burns.
And I'm co-host Meredith Bach, and we are live every Thursday at 11 a.m.
Join us for original comic news and entertainment and top-notch interviews and up-to-the-minute topics.
Join us and hear various co-hosts for far-reaching expertise on endless topics when you need to be in the know.
That's Anything Goes with Kim Burns, Thursday mornings at 11, 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com anywhere.
The Lisa Wexler Show, on the air every afternoon on AM 1490 WGCH and anytime and anywhere at WGCH.com.
Let's stimulate your brain.
Hola. Hola, bienvenidos. Willkommen, bienvenue, welcome. It's 533, 203-661, 5051. Sugar is napping. The weather is fabuloso. Right? It's fabulous. The heat wave broke. It's gorgeous weather right now. And it is a Tuesday. 203-661-5051. Je m'appelle Lisa. Lisa Wexler. Guess what? Judge Judy, Greenwich resident, just bought a $9 million Newport mansion, according to the Greenwich Times. She's got some spare change. She decided she wants to buy a cottage in Newport. She and her husband purchased an estate called Birdhouse that had been owned by the granddaughter of the man who invented the technique used by Campbell Soup to make condensed soup. According to a report in the Newport Daily News citing Sotheby's International Realty, back in 2007, Judge Judy and her spouse, Judge Jerry Scheindlin, spent over $13 million for a Greenwich property, and it's reported where they built a 17,000-square-foot mansion. So I guess they just paid that for the land. According to E! News, as of last October, the couple invests a lot in real estate, also owning a property in Naples, Florida, one in Manhattan, one in L.A., and Greenwich serving as their primary residence. The Newport Daily News quoted the Shinelands saying they were looking forward to falling in love with Newport. And there it is. Because you can't have too many mansions by the water, can you? And because sometimes justice pays. And in the case of Judge Judy, who's my favorite saying of hers is, hold on, don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. I can't tell you how often I have wanted to say that in my own court. I love that saying of Judge Judy's. Don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. Somebody bought me that book when I became a judge. If you look through my desk in court, and it's sort of buried there someplace. I haven't read much of it, I confess. But she's the original. Everyone else is the copy. Judge Judy's the original. Judge Judy, in case of those of you who don't know, who only know her as a TV judge, she was a New York City family law judge for, I believe, about 15 years, which means that she saw and she heard everything. There isn't anything this woman didn't see or hear if she was a New York City family court judge. Of course she was able to say, don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. Are you kidding? Do you know how many people tried to pee on her leg? It's 5:36. Another Greenwich story. Speaking of the water, there were cheers in Old Greenwich this weekend as a father and son sailing duo took first place honors as part of a crew in an around-the-world yacht race. Congratulations to the crew of the Sanya Serenity Coast, which arrived Friday at the Royal Albert Dock in Liverpool, with Benoit Ansart and his son Victor, quote, earning big gulps of champagne as the crew member who helped get the boat safely and quickly around the globe over the past 11 months. Benoit Ansart carried the sailing pennant known as the Burgi, or is it the Burgi? You'll have to tell me. 203-661-5051 of the Old Greenwich Yacht Club with him for the 40,000-mile trek through hurricanes and 30-foot seas. This is a pretty exciting thing. It's called the Clipper Race. It's now in its 11th year, a unique competition that draws many amateur and beginner sailors, along with experienced veterans, into, quote, its grueling test of endurance and maritime skill. In this race, there were 712 people representing 41 different nationalities and all walks of life who took place. Benoit Ansart is one of 73 mariners who did the entire journey. Others took part in stages. There were all different legs, Australia to China, the Pacific to Seattle, New York to the finish in Liverpool. Victor saying, he's 26, this has been the best experience of my life. Just to complete the challenge is enough, but winning means so much more than I thought it would. It's amazing to have raced around the globe and great that we managed to do it just slightly faster than the 10 other teams. Sailors in Old Greenwich saying, what an epic adventure. Patrice Annabelle, the Commodore of the Old Greenwich Yacht Club, she noted that hurricanes, icebergs, whales, and fishing nets were just a few of the obstacles encountered by the sailors. The Sanya Serenity Coast, sponsored by the Chinese city Sanya, was helmed by an Australian sailor named Wendy Tuck, who became the first woman to win the round-the-world yacht race. Very exciting. And speaking of yachts and water, a great white shark was caught off the beach, off the coast of Rhode Island, by fisherman Michael Lorello, who dragged up a net and found a six-foot-long great white shark in the net, showing off its teeth, very much alive. He caught the fish Sunday morning, three-quarters of a mile from Musquamicut Beach. The shark was on the boat for less than 10 minutes, then quickly released back into the water. If you go on Facebook, you can see the video of the brief catch. One of the videos shows the shark thrashing on board the boat as crew members approach it to send it back into the Atlantic. Lorello says he thinks the fish weighed between 400 to 500 pounds. And although he's been a fisherman for 20 years, he's never experienced anything like that. That would be an extraordinary thing. But I guess because it was in a net as opposed to the shark in Jaws, all of us remember that, right? Da, 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 da. Remember the theme from Jaws? Anyway, pretty thrilling altogether. 203-661-5051. It's 540. We'll come back with some other stories and news you may have missed. Let's go to weather and traffic.
Good afternoon. If you're traveling the northbound Connecticut Turnpike, it's a 34-minute ride now from the state line up to Route 7 in Norwalk. The northbound Merritt Parkway in pretty good shape. 23-minute ride from the state line up to Route 7. Drunk driving, 100% preventable, 100% of the time. Help them create a future of no more victims at MADD.org. That's MADD.org. I'm Jay Trelease in the 1490 WGCH Traffic Center.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Increasing cloudiness with rising humidity levels tonight. A few showers after midnight, lows 65 to 70. Tomorrow, partly sunny, scattered showers, locally heavy thunderstorms. Highs 80 to 85. For the same, partial sunshine, scattered showers and thunderstorms near 85 on Thursday. At Connecticut Basement Systems, they're the experts in all things basement-y. Call 866-691-8595 for a free quote. I'm meteorologist Ryan Gallagher on 1490 WGCH.
At Indian Point, we've helped power Westchester and New York City for about four decades. Recently, as part of an agreement with New York State, we are working toward an early and orderly shutdown of the facility by 2021. Until then, we'll continue safely generating about 25% of the reliable, round-the-clock electricity that powers the city and Westchester, all with virtually no greenhouse gas emissions. Safety is, as it always has been, the top priority for everyone at the plant. We will continue to keep Indian Point fully staffed, and full-time inspectors from the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission will monitor our daily operations. We'll also continue to play an important role in our community as a taxpayer and active participant in local charities. Indian Point Energy Center is still working for you, and it's our honor to continue to serve the people of New York. If you have questions about our ongoing operations, please visit safesecurevital.com.
This is Noreen Ehrlich, Success and Relationship Coach. Your time is precious. It is time to stop hiding and start hustling. What does that mean, you say? Please join me every Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m. for Defy and Hustle with Noreen Ehrlich, when I'll approach your everyday issues with wise but uncommon sense. You don't have to settle. I want you to be in love with your life. Are you ready? Then join me Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. on 1490 WGCH.
You've read the Facebook and Twitter rants from others.
Now get the real scoop on today's hot topics.
It's the Lisa Wexler Show.
So last night, I went into the city, and I went, so listen to this. So I went to the city, and I went to a party given by my friend Wendy Fetterman. You know Wendy. Wendy is a fabulous Broadway producer. She has won umpteen Tonys. She's got extraordinary taste. And she only started this career not too long ago, maybe 10 or 11 years ago, maybe 12, not too long ago. Her first big show that she adored, that she ended up investing in, that did really well, was Spring Awakenings, but she also invested in Passing Strange and a number of other shows, Hair, Pippin, Dear Evan Hansen. I mean, she's really something. So last night for her birthday, her daughter sent us all an invitation for her gal pals. There had to be 60 women there. One nicer than the other, one better dressed, frankly, than the other, not included, present company excluded, but very glitzy crowd. I met Wendy through my sister Jill. And so they have a lot of the friends in common. So I had a lot of people in the room that I already knew, but I met some new ones too. I had a good time. And the thing about a party for all girls, all women, or ladies, was that it was really fun and everybody was very engaged and happy to be there and very, very chatty. The party was really an interesting space. It was thrown in a lounge space. That's the second floor of a restaurant on 60th and Lex. And I think the name is called Zavo, Z-A-V-O, something like that. And we went upstairs. It was a beautiful space, and there was a dance floor. So she had, you know, a two- or three-piece combo, plus, you know, the disco music, which, frankly, everybody likes better. No, the music was good. It was okay. and food and buffet. But the thing about women is, particularly women of a certain age, I'm in that age, is that we have no more inhibitions. So that dance floor, without men, was so crowded for the entire evening. Women don't care anymore. Once you hit 40, you don't care. You just want to have a good time. You take your shoes off if you're wearing heels, and you dance for the fun of dancing. And it was such a great party because it was organized for women. It was organized as a dance party and beautiful speeches, and it was really lovely, and I was very happy to be invited. It was really fun. But I drove home. You know, I didn't get home before midnight-ish, a little bit later. It's hard to do that on a Monday night, you know? It's going strong from 8 a.m. to midnight. 545-203-661-5051. All right, the big idea. There are two big stories that came out today with respect to money. Try not to let your eyes glaze over. Actually, three. The first one gathered over 2,100 comments on the New York Times, so I feel compelled to discuss it with you. And the second is underreported, buried news, and the third is unique to Connecticut. But they're all around money. Money and borrowing and what we're doing, big picture and little picture. And the big idea is how do we, in America, right now, distribute money between the money that we have in our pockets, the money that we have as governments, as taxpayers, that we are giving, that we are voluntarily giving or involuntarily giving to a government? How well is that money being spent on our behalf? And what is the final reckoning? How does this all play into our ability to grow our own personal economy, save for our retirement, and live comfortably? And it is all interconnected. It all is of a big puzzle piece. So the first bit of news today is news coming out of the Trump White House that says that the Trump White House would like to change the capital gains definition, which by definition would put a lot more money into the pockets of rich people because comparatively speaking, rich people have capital gains. Poor people don't have capital gains because they don't have capital. But it would also have a great impact on the middle class. So what I want to explain to you is what is being proposed in the Trump White House right now and why it's relevant to you is that from time immemorial, we've understood that the difference between what you pay for something, which is called your basis, and what you sell it for, which is your amount realized, that difference, if it's a profit, is also known as a gain. If you have held that asset for over 6 months, it's called a capital gain. If you haven't held that asset for 6 months, it's called an ordinary gain. Why does that matter? It matters because our tax code has two columns. One is for ordinary gains, and the other is for capital gains. Ordinary gains are taxed at ordinary income, which is typically higher. Capital gains are taxed at a lower rate, typically around 20%. It's varied in the past, but let's assume 20%, 15%, just for round numbers, we'll call it 20. Ordinary income is taxed at what we think of as our income tax rate. It can be 33%, 38%, whatever it is, if it's at a higher rate, or it can be lower. And what Donald Trump wants to do in this White House, it's very important that you understand this, is he wants to say, I'm going to make it very simple. Let's say you bought a boat, and you bought the boat in 2010, and you paid $25,000 for the boat. And it may not be a good example to use a boat because everyone knows a boat loses money. But let's say you buy the boat, and that boat, you actually have a profit on your boat. 2010, you buy it for $25,000. 2018, you sell it for $35,000. Let's do the math. It's a gain of $10,000. You pay a 20% capital gains tax. You owe the government $2,000. You keep $8,000. Okay, you with me? What Donald Trump wants to do is he wants to say, you know, in 2010, you might have spent $25,000 for that boat. But if we adjust that cost based on the inflation between 2010 and 2018, you didn't really pay $10,000 for that boat. You paid $12,000 for that boat because $10,000 then is not what it is today. You with me? So if you pay $12,000 and you sell it, what did I say? $25,000? I'm sorry. Let's say you spend, let's say instead of $25,000, it's really $27,000, and you still sell it for $35,000. Instead of making $10,000 on the gain, on the sale, you only really made $8,000, which means the government gets paid, instead of $2,000, it gets paid $1,600. And what does that mean? That means that the government gets less money for that gain, but you have still collected your $35,000. So you're paying effectively less taxes. And the reason that this is very, very important is because, think about it, it radically shifts how we report our taxes. In my view, it's a huge opportunity for accountants everywhere. It makes things very complex, or more complex than it used to be. And it is without question, a gift for people that own capital assets, which again, tend to be people that are richer to begin with, because they are people who have accumulated enough wealth to own things of substantial worth and hold on to them for more than 6 months at a time. You know what? I've got Luke Vargas holding from Talk Media News. I could talk about this for a long time, but it's not right because it's rude. Luke, hello and welcome from Talk Media News. Hi.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So we're talking a little bit about the economy today. That story gathered more than 2,000 comments on the New York Times.
The tax story?
Yes, the tax story. There's a lot of people.
Yep. I'm glad you described it because it's not my area of expertise.
Well, Barbara. I hope I described it clearly. Did you understand what I was trying to say?
I'm getting at it.
It adjusts what we think about as the basis. And if you know tax law at all, that's the key. So it basically says whatever you think you paid for something gets adjusted upward by virtue of inflation, which means the difference between what you sell it for and what you originally paid for it shrinks. It's a smaller number. And therefore, the government cut is a smaller number.
Yep. We'll see. It sounds like this is, and it's a new way of doing a tax, too. It's bypassing Congress. So we'll see.
Well, that's the other issue. That's the political issue. But I wanted to go to the economic issue first.
Yep. I don't have much more to say on that, but I will keep digging into it. I still have someone else does my taxes. It's out of sight, out of mind, and I guess I sort of take what comes to me. And maybe I should, as I start to make more and, you know, more deductions and these things are more important and have more assets in the market, I will care more about federal tax policy. But for now, it's one of those things where I just leave it to others to settle. But unfortunately, I think we often see that, you know, a lot of the policy is not geared towards helping out always the little guys. So, you know, because I'm not making more, I'm not even sensitive to the issues where tax policy could be negatively or positively affecting me.
All right. So what do you want to tell us today?
Well, I'm watching a few things. I've, of course, been paying attention to the Manafort trial. We can talk about that or we cannot talk
about
it.
Well, I didn't speak about it much. Can you give us a couple of headlines from it? Have they chosen the entire jury?
I think we're very close. The last, we have a reporter there. I think he had said midday that they were almost done. I mean, the one takeaway from what I've seen is that the judge today was very clear he doesn't want Trump's name coming up at all in this, which I think is reflective of the fact that the judge had previously said, look, these are paper charges that we're bringing against Manafort. We don't even need to get into what his motive or his intent was in any of this tax fraud or bank fraud, that's going to be something which is plumbed deeply at the trial in September in Washington, D.C., which is much more about sort of Manafort's political actions, why he was supporting these, you know, Russian-aligned politicians.
So wait a minute. He's facing two different sets of judges and two different sets of charges and trials?
Correct. So there are 18 counts against him in Virginia, which is where he resides. These are for tax fraud and bank fraud, and they break down into two groups, the first being when things were going well for him, he was making, we believe, up to $60 million in money from the Ukrainian government, the pre-revolution Ukrainian government. Viktor Yanukovych, the guy who ordered the killing of many protesters in the square and poisoned his former political opponent.
Yeah.
Manafort was like his lead international strategist, which I will just have a a little throw barb at Manafort and say, having covered Ukraine in the revolution, we must at least say Manafort is guilty of being quite unpatriotic by, you know, supporting a government that was clearly defying American foreign policy interests in the region. That said, these charges concern the fact that he got all this $60 million and then, as the Mueller probe alleges, you know, laundered about $30 million of that back to the United States, buying cars, property, transferring money.
Oh, this is the $10,000 suit. Got it.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. So that's
$30
million in
okay.
money laundering. Then the second piece is about when he goes, when the fun ends, right? The Ukrainian revolution occurs. He's $17 million in debt to a Russian oligarch, very close to President Putin. And he is not making anything. And so he begins to, according to this suit, fraudulently doctor bank declarations. He starts in the process of making paperwork to get mortgages, saying that properties that he's renting are actually properties that he owns, and thus he wants to take out loans on them. He doctors profit and loss forms for his own businesses to show him making many more millions of dollars than he is, so he can get personal lines of credit. And that's sort of what they call the financial institution scheme. And so that brings us right up to the point where he joins the Trump campaign and is at that time, again, $17 million in debt to a Russian oligarch. But that's where this current trial in Virginia ends. We are expecting a 2-week trial. The judge in this case, and you can tell me if this is usual that a judge would say something like this, was quoted as saying, Mr. Manafort, quote, "You face the very real possibility of spending the rest of your life in prison," end quote. The judge thinks these are pretty clear-cut charges against Manafort, and again says they are, and you tell me again what this means, paper charges, ones where all the evidence is just in the documents that were submitted, it's in the things that were purchased, and, you know, they don't need to put Manafort on the stand and get him to, you know, talk about his motive because the proof is in the document.
Is the second trial, Luke Vargas, with the same judge?
No, and it's in Washington, D.C.
It's in Washington, D.C., different judge, district judge, and that second one gets closer to his involvement with the Trump campaign?
Yes, there's 7 charges in that one. The trial begins in December in Washington. The charges he's defending against are conspiracy to defraud the United States government, which Manafort's second-in-command, this guy named Rick Gates, had already pled guilty to.
Okay.
And lying about the extent of foreign lobbying. He had some forms that he was supposed to fill out saying what I'm up to, and he either didn't submit them or lied about what he was up to. And then finally, 2 new charges put against him in recent months were for witness tampering. That's why he's
bail was revoked. Right. Okay. That was not clear to me. That was not clear to me in everything I've read about it. It was not clear to me he was going in front of 2 judges on 2 different trials with respect to, you know, it's astonishing, even on the basis of the complaints, whether he's found ultimately guilty or not, it's astonishing how much money went through his hands, isn't
it? Yeah, I mean,
does somebody become so in debt if they were really making $60 million a year? I mean, how much money can you spend? Is he a compulsive gambler?
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, $60 million he was said to have brought in from the Ukrainians, and then $30 million of it was laundered. I don't know what happened to the other 30. Maybe he was still trying to hold on to it. But what these indictments show, though, is that law enforcement was onto this well before the trail, you know, his profits ran dry, that this was already raising concerns with you know, U.S. regulators before 2014, before the revolution in Ukraine sort of ends the heady days for him in Kiev.
Manafort grew up in New Britain, Connecticut.
I didn't.
Yeah. I mean, he's a Connecticut.
Well, he may not ever go back.
No, but he's a Connecticut boy. In his young years, he was active in the Republican Party. I have friends that knew him very well as a young man. And then I guess he just, I don't know. He went off to D.C. and different parts beyond, and boy, was he a risk taker. Wow. I mean, I'm just wondering about the character of this person. It's very exotic, this story. It's not a typical story. Anyway, Luke Vargas, we're coming up on 6 o'clock. I thank you for joining us today and explaining that to me.
Welcome.
Really appreciate it. You're listening to 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere. You can tune in every single day to the Lisa Wexler Show between 4 and 6 o'clock and catch up what's going on in the world. This evening, we've got Intoxicate with Kate talking about food, followed by our own Josh Soma, who will be talking sports. So stay tuned for more of great local programming here at 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere. I'll be back behind the mic tomorrow.
You're listening to the station you grew up with, 1490 WGCH, Greenwich.
Manif-